Welcome to All Things Beer, a Pat's Pints, Mark's Mugs podcast.
I'm Pat Woodward.
And I'm Mark Richards.
Each month, we are joined by brewers, enthusiasts, and friends to explore the techniques, the culture, and the history of mankind's best invention.
So grab a beer and join us as we discover a world of all things beer.
Welcome back to the All Things Beer podcast. And we're really excited this month because we've got a special guest. We're happy to welcome Quinn Bartlett. New Gig Brewing is at Hoster's Brewing. And before, many people will know him from his work at Buzzsaw, which was a great brewery that specialized in a lot of Belgian-themed beers. And welcome to the show, Quinn.
Thanks for having me. Nice to be here.
Yeah, I thought it would be a good opportunity to talk about Trappist-style beers that, if you're not a monastery, we would call Abbey-style ales.
And that are brewed here in the Americas.
So, I mean, if you go back to our back catalog, people will know that we're big fans of Belgian beers, and we've done lots of episodes on Belgian beers from Belgium, but we thought it would be fun to talk about where things are going with Belgian beers that are brewed, I should say Belgian-style beers that are brewed here in the U.S.
Yeah, totally.
Quinn, why don't you introduce yourself and tell us a little bit how you got into brewing and how you developed an affinity for Belgian-style beers?
I got into brewing beer almost 10 years ago now, just home brewing as a hobby, kind of like a lot of people do. At the beginning, I didn't really have an aspiration to open a brewery, but I was really, really into Belgian and European beers because of my, I guess, entrance into drinking craft beer, which was sort of towards the end of college. And then after college, I traveled Europe a lot and did a fair share of imbibing in the local the local fair. The interesting thing is before I got into beer, I got really into wine.
Okay.
So traveling in France and Italy and Croatia, and I got really into drinking all the European wines. And then when I came back to the U.S., I went sort of back to my roots of drinking craft beer. Like, you know, originally it was kind of like Sierra Nevada, Pale Ale, Dogfish Head, 60 Minute, and things like that. And then I came back and I was like, well, they have like Hoegaarden and, you know, all kinds of other stuff. So I started drinking that. And then when I was in between jobs and didn't really know where I was kind of going in life, I just was, you know, needed stuff to do. So I was decided to, you know, make my own beer. And it was hard to get, you know, reasonably priced Belgian style beers that I really liked. You know, now in hindsight, now I have a job and everything like that. So it's not sure. Like crazy expensive right. To buy a bottle of Belgian beer. But at the time, I was kind of like, well, it's, you know, it's a hell of a lot cheaper if I brew it myself. So I got really, really into it really, really quickly. I think it was just because I had a lot of empty mind bandwidth from being out of work and stuff. So, you know, it's funny. I actually was cleaning my basement a couple weeks ago and stumbled upon my first ever brewing journal.
Oh, okay.
And I had my first ever beer recipes written down, like the first beer I ever made. And I think the fourth or fifth beer I ever brewed was a Belgian triple.
Wow.
And
okay.
It was like immediately, like from then on, I was brewing all kinds of Belgian beer. So I was always really drawn to it for whatever reason. And then years later, a friend of mine was opening his own business in Denver. And I went out to visit him and talk about it. And he was like, oh, you should totally open a brewery, blah, blah, blah. And that was kind of where the idea came from. This is probably back in 2015, 2016, something
okay.
like that.
Okay. What was the timeline? When did Buzzsaw Brewing open?
We sold our first beer in February of 2021.
Well, there's a lot of steps between the idea like, okay, I want to do this, yeah. and then actually opening up, isn't it?
Yeah, for timeline perspective, we got our first investment with money to open the brewery in 2018.
Okay.
So it took us 3 years to basically start with raising the money and then open the brewery. Because, you know, it was me and my former business partner, you know, a bunch of, you know, 20-some-year-olds with no money. So we had to like raise capital to get it going.
Sure. That's no small thing. Do you have a favorite triple? You were just mentioning that your first Belgian homebrew was a triple. And actually, we're drinking an older can I had of the Treasure Trove Abbey Triple from Buzzsaw. Would you say there's any particular triples that influenced you?
I really like Chimay. I like a lot of the beers Chimay makes. That was one.
Can't go wrong with Chimay.
No. Yeah. Chimay is a good one. Triple Carmelia is good, too.
That's the best.
It's a four grain. It's an interesting brew. The thing I love most about the triple style is it's a bit wider ranging. It's almost like the big brother of the Belgian Golden Strong, you know?
Right,
because
right.
the Golden Strong is like, you know, you basically have to make Duvel.
Yeah.
You know, with the triple, you get a little more stylistic flair.
Yeah, I love triple Carmelia.
I always like the Chimay one. It's very pure. It's a lighter triple, but I also like the triple Carmelia because it's kind of the opposite end of the spectrum, but they're both very good. And the other thing I love about the triples that come from Europe, and we can get into more about the American ones, but they're never too sweet. They're always yeah. really well balanced. They're dry enough to be drinkable. They're not overly hopped, and they're aged well enough to be smooth.
Yes.
You know, we're drinking the old, I guess it's now it's pretty old, can of Buzzsaw Treasure Trove Triple. And it actually, I think, still holds up pretty well. It does taste a bit old, maybe a little oxidized, but it's actually, you know, for the most part, it's held up pretty well.
It's a little long in the tooth, but not bad at all.
I mean, you have to remember that when you're drinking the ones that are coming from Belgium, those are probably all 6 months old by the time you get them in anyway.
Yeah, sure.
And a few months on those beers, I think, is kind of nice because the spiky yeast profile kind of rounds out a little bit.
Definitely. A little sweeter.
How would you approach this beer from all different perspectives? For example, when you think about a triple and you think about the malts, you think about the yeast, the hops, when you were designing this beer, what was the thought process that went into that?
A lot of it came from just trying to brew triples as a home brewer. So the recipe and the grain bill percentages for what I was using and the hop bitterness and the yeast, particular yeast I was using, I had all really mapped out beforehand. Though I really mostly was focusing on what I didn't want it to be.
Okay.
I didn't want it to be overly spiced. I don't like Belgian knockoffs that are really heavily coriandered up.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, because the yeast is already going to impart a lot of spiciness. And then like what you just said, the beers that we get from Belgium are 6 months old. You don't really realize how intense the flavor is going to be with a fresh Belgian triple,
yeah,
you know, where it's been
yeah.
in the keg for 5 days. So I really did just kind of wanted to keep it really simple and almost brew it like a basically higher alcohol blonde ale, you know. So
okay.
There was no finishing hops in it at all. It was only bittering hops. There was no spices in it. And then I also used a little bit of like light crystal malt and wheat in the
okay.
grain bill
mm-hmm.
to give it a little bit more body. Obviously, a lot of sugar to drive the alcohol up and keep it nice and dry.
Yeah, I think that's one of the keys, right? Getting enough sugar in there to keep it dry, and that maybe sometimes the American brewers are just a little hesitant to go where it needs to be. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I think people hesitate to dump that much sugar in the kettle. You know, they're not quite, they're a little bit like, oh my God. But no, I think this beer is almost 15% if the grain
okay.
is straight sugar. I would always pitch very cold with my yeast. I don't know how into like the brewing process you get into stuff.
Well,
in this,
you know, there are homebrewers who listen. And so, yeah, I was going to ask you about the temperature protocols with your yeast here.
Yeah, yeah. I like to pitch real cold and keep it on the cold side, like, you know, mid 60s.
Okay.
For the first day and then just get out of the way.
Yeah.
And just
yeah.
let it go.
And let it do its thing.
Right? Yeah.
On your setup there at Buzzsaw, how high would it go then?
It definitely went higher on the larger volumes of beer. So at Buzzsaw, I had two different systems I was brewing beer on. One was one barrel
okay.
and one was 20.
Yeah.
So the one barrel batches of the triple would get to about, I would say, 78 to 80.
Okay.
And then the larger batch got into the low to mid 80s. And the other thing is, once it gets up to the 80s, I don't like knock it back immediately. So even
okay.
though fermentation's over and the beer is 82 degrees, I just let it sit.
Yeah.
And let it naturally kind of come down by itself. And that would definitely help it from being harsh and like tasting green.
I mean, I think then the yeast is still doing some work. It's still cleaning up some of the things that leaked out while it was up there at the vigorous fermentation.
Yeah,
yeah,
definitely. Do you guys have a particular style of Belgian beer that you find yourself drinking more than others? Because we are drinking like the classic Belgian, the triple,
yeah.
you know?
Yeah.
It's like the big boy.
Not particularly. I mean, I definitely lean triple over quads. Yeah, probably triple is right in my wheelhouse. I like it better than double as well. Doubles have more muddy flavors, I don't know, a little more malt character, whereas I like the spritzy prickliness, you know, off a triple.
Saisons and Orval, which is a Trappist, but yet still kind of
yeah.
in its own league, really, are also great beers, too.
So. Oh, yeah.
I don't know. It's hard to pick a favorite.
Those Belgians know how to brew beer.
They do. I love Orval. That might be my favorite. That's probably my desert island beer.
Yeah, it's pretty damn good.
If that's the only, if I had one beer left to drink for the rest of my life, it'd be Orval.
Yeah,
100%.
You age yours?
I do. Yes.
Yeah.
I don't at the moment have any aging, but while I was operating Buzzsaw and I had friends in the industry, I would ask some of my friends who were the beer buyers at places to
yeah.
buy me a case because they had access to the distributor that mm-hmm. would, you know, so I would get them to buy me a case and like every, you know, few months or so, I would get a case of it. And then we would be able to do verticals from different years. I never
yes,
had
yes.
that many. I don't think I ever had more than like two or three different years
yeah.
of it, but
okay.
it was always fun to do that. And then age some of them, you could age them in the fridge and the other ones you could age like warm and see how they change.
Yeah.
The only thing I regret is I've never really been to Belgium for a beer tour properly. So I've never really done my due diligence as a brewer of Belgian beer in America
yeah.
to like go around and see how everyone does things differently. So I've never been to a place that serves like fresh Orval, because I've heard it's actually quite hoppy and interesting, almost like a pale ale.
Mm-hmm. It's a lot different, I mean, as you know, if you've done verticals when it's fresh versus a few years old. I kind of think 3 years is my, that's my go-to.
Even if you just get that's it here, the youngest I've ever seen a bottle that I bought from a distributor person here was like 6 to 9 months.
Okay.
So even then, like, you could probably get it way younger if you were over there. Yeah.
Well, I've been to Orval, and I went to the cafe, and when they come out to, you know, take your order, they're like, oh, what age of Orval would you like, right? And so, and I said, well, give me the freshest that you can, for the first beer anyway, because I've never had it. And I think there, it was bottled 3 months old. Even when you're at the cafe, so you know, they're not serving it off the bright tank. But yeah, it's hoppier. It's a little more.
Do they have it on draft, or is it still all bottled?
They also have something they call Petit Orval, Green Orval, which is a lower strength version of it. Well, maybe that's on draft, because when they brought it out, it was just in a glass. It wasn't, you know, there wasn't the bottle with it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a good question. I'm going to say, I think at least with the Petit Orval, they do put that in kegs.
I was curious because the Orval beers are carbonated so highly.
Yeah.
It's almost impossible to get a good draft pour out of that.
It's like 5 volume CO2, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that takes us to another topic, and that is carbonation level. And I think when we try some of these beers today, we'll come back to that. But what was your approach to carbonation at Buzzsaw of beers like this?
Basically, as high as possible.
Okay.
Whatever I can get into the can or the keg and have it not like be a nuisance on draft for my customers. You know, if you have too many volumes of CO2 in the tank as you're canning, then you'll lose volume in the can. So you'll end up losing even more CO2 because it has to accommodate that headspace in the can. Plus, people are buying a 16-ounce beer. They want 16 ounces of beer in the can. So it was pretty much the highest I could get it, which would mean how cold can the beer go into the can. Fortunately, the triple is a high alcohol beer, so you could get it really, really, really cold before canning.
Oh, like, right, because of the alcohol, you could go even below 32. Yeah.
So when we canned, I would bring the temperature of the tank down into the high 20s.
Okay.
Make sure that I could get as much into the can as possible. That's one of the sad parts of brewing Belgian beers in America, is you have to accommodate for the people that are going to put it on draft, you know, because nobody's draft system is built for beers that are 3 to 3.5 volumes of CO2. It's just going to be foam. Then they're going to be mad. They lose a bunch of beer that they paid for, you know, so.
Right.
Can't really do that.
I lived a year in the UK. I was on sabbatical over there, and there was a place in Nottingham. Actually, Dan Eaton, who's a Columbus guy who was in England, we met there. It was like the only place in the UK you could go, but they had a special, like a Keyser or something for Duvel. And it was as carbonated as you get it in the bottle, but it was separate from the entire rest of the draft line and everything like that. So it was kind of interesting. But of course, not that many places are going to set up their own, you know, their own dedicated one keg draft line just for your beer, right?
That's a tough ask unless you pay for it yourself. That's usually how it goes.
They're well, they could probably afford it, Duvel. Yeah, of course.
Right, yeah.
Well, I mean, let's talk a little bit about some of the challenges of selling Belgian beers to Americans. I mean, I'm always kind of thinking, I don't understand why these beers aren't more popular than they are. And I think the trajectory lately is a little more downhill than uphill in some ways. You have this experience of making a Belgian beer. And what do you think limits people from buying more?
Why doesn't America get it?
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a good question. I do think the overall trajectory of craft beer right now is unfortunately the wrong direction for beers like this to gain traction. So if you look at a lot of the top producers of Belgian style beers, both in quality and volume in the country, they're often the oldest breweries.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, New Belgium, Allagash, Boulevard, you know, some of these were from the
80s.
Omegang, absolutely. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Omegang is now part of Duvel.
Also is Boulevard, right?
Boulevard is too, yeah, but I didn't really realize this until recently, but the Duvel Mortgat America headquarters are in Cooperstown, New York.
Oh, is that right? Okay.
Yeah.
Actually, I don't think I knew that. Okay, yeah. Interesting.
So the trajectory of craft beer as a whole has been in the wrong way for beers like this to become more popular, but I think part of it is just people are unfamiliar with it.
Yeah.
You know? So you have to familiarize the beer for people. One of the more interesting stories I heard about selling Belgian style beers was the story of Tank 7 from Boulevard.
From Boulevard. Yep.
Yeah, one of their most iconic beers, which is a farmhouse saison.
Mm-hmm. Great beer.
Awesome beer. Brewed in sort of in the as an homage to Saison DuPont. It reminds me a lot of that, maybe a little higher alcohol. They saw, I forget who did this from, maybe if someone listening knows or can fact check me, but it used to say on the can and bottle, or actually I think it was just bottles at the time, but it used to say on the bottle, Farmhouse Saison, and they changed it, just the little text at the bottom, to say American Saison. And they saw a pretty solid increase, significant increase in their sales, because it was like, this is an American beer.
Okay.
So yep. I think people who make Belgian beer need to Americanize it, not in flavor. You know, obviously you want it to taste like the delicious beers of Belgium, but you can Americanize your beers by giving them fun names or putting different stylistic words at the, as the description, which I tried to do with Buzzsaw, and having a Belgian IPA.
Yeah.
You know, which is kind of like a not style style, you know, definitely things like that help, you know, so.
How did the market receive the Belgian IPA?
Very well.
Okay.
Within the month of releasing it, it became our second highest selling beer after our Pilsner.
I mean, Mark oftentimes says, if you just slap the words IPA on it, you know, you can double the sales.
Three letters is all you need.
How was that hopped?
All Whirlpool. So I didn't do any like minute hopping. So yeah, it was okay. All bittering and then all Whirlpool. And then I used Styrian Golding, Amarillo, and Huel Melon.
Some of those newer German hops that came from, I think Huel Melon was bred from Cascade and some German hop. I'm a big fan of those. And I think they work really well in those Belgian style beers.
They're not quite as harsh. They won't make it as IPA-y.
They don't have that dankness. They don't correct. Have, yeah that not, piney nature and things like that.
They're
just
not quite as heavy and intense, but they give it a nice hop bite to give you that familiarity of the IPA flavor without kind of overdoing it.
I sometimes think that one of the challenges of Belgian beers is a lot of people, at least I do this sometimes, you kind of put it in the category of like, oh, this is a special occasion beer. And of course, if you're trying to sell beer to people, you don't want them to do that, right? You want this to be like the everyday beer.
The name of the game is to get the beer that you're selling into people's like rotation, or you want to try to get your tap room into their rotation of places to go.
Right. Yeah.
But if you're talking about distribution, you want to just try to get your beer into like as many people's kind of like constant rotation as you can. And if you are going to be a special occasion beer, then you just have to have a really wide footprint.
Yeah.
You have
exactly.
to be able to get as a larger area serviced, which is extremely expensive. So people don't really do that.
I mean, that's what the Trappist breweries do, right? Like Chimay or Orval. I mean, they're sold all around the world, but they're not huge breweries, really. This is the Wind of Change Abbey Triple. I'm a Scorpions fan, and I name a lot of my beers from the titles of Scorpions songs. I name almost all my beers the title of a rock song. Mark and I got turned on to this podcast called Wind of Change. So this was a song that came out around the end of the Cold War, when the Berlin Wall was coming down. The Scorpions are a German heavy metal group. This song was a bit of a ballad. There's a whistling thing in it that I'm not going to try and do. But this whole podcast was about that the CIA wrote the song and then convinced the Scorpions to record it, basically like soft propaganda to help bring down the Iron Curtain. I mean, this beer isn't going to do any of those things, right? This is just a beer.
The wall's already down.
Yeah, the wall's already down, and it's not going to, you know, it's not going to win the war in Ukraine or anything like that, I think. It's just a beer.
We'll never know until we try, though.
If the CIA comes to me and says, we want to make this in a little bit bigger volume, you know, I'm open to that offer.
It smells decently hoppy.
Yeah. Let me see. I should look at my own notes on what I did with this thing.
The Brett is expressing nicely.
There's no Brett in there.
There isn't?
No, nope, really.
Doesn't it seem like it?
It has some funk for
sour.
Sure.
It's got a lot of sour funk.
It's got some funk in the smell. I was thinking that was actually from the hops.
Yeah.
Do you know what strain of yeast you used, whether it was the Westmalle or the Chimay?
So I use Omega yeast, and for all my Belgian beers, I generally use the Belgian A, which is the Aschouf yeast.
Okay.
Interesting. Is that the same yeast as the Doodle yeast, or am I
no,
mistaken?
No, it's a different strain.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
I find the phenolics not quite as assertive as, let's say, the Westmalle. And then the other thing it does, it's pretty flocculent, so your beers clear out decently well.
Oh, that's nice. I always use the Chimay yeast, and it's the exact opposite.
Yeah.
That thing sticks around forever and ever and ever, cold crash it for a month, and it's still hazy.
And you sure there's no bread in here? It's pretty phenolic.
There's definitely no bread in there.
at least intentionally.
Yeah, no, it's a little tart too, isn't it? Yeah, yeah.
I wouldn't say it's tart, but it definitely has a bigger bite than the Treasure Trove that we just drank. But that beer was also quite old, so it's possible that the flavors were kind of dying off there. Yeah. But.
So the hops on this one, Sots, Deary and Goldings, and then in the Whirlpool also 2 ounces Mandarina Bavaria.
Nice. When did you bottle this?
This was bottled at the end of December.
Oh, okay. Pretty recently.
Pretty recent.
And I see what you guys mean about the phenolics or something here is a little bit more assertive. It's got more yeastiness to it for sure. Mm-hmm. This is the second time I brewed it. And the last one, I mean, literally probably after almost a year, it came into like a sweet spot where I was like, oh, I really like where it's at now. Yeah, sometimes it just takes a little age to round the corners off, I think.
One interesting piece of history about Belgian beer was that the breweries were taxed based on the volume of their mash tun.
Right, right.
Just the volume of the mash tun. So they would pack in this tiny mash tun, like just fill it to the brim. Right. So they'd have like this, you know, big kettle, tiny mash tun. So to brew a triple and to get a volume of beer that they could fill a tank with, they would ferment it 3 times.
Okay.
So I have never done like a
ferment it 3 times?
Yeah, correct. So okay. they would fill the mash tun to the brim and brew it like a really high gravity wort. And because they're trying to get a high gravity beer at the end, they wouldn't end up filling the kettle or the tank.
Yes, okay.
Right, so they're using less louder water. Mm-hmm. So they would end up brewing typically 2 runs of it to fill their tank. And then the third fermentation would be the fermentation in the bottle.
Okay.
So they would get like one, they'd have to start fermentation 1 with what they brewed day 1. And then when that yeast hits high Krausen, day 3 or 4, whatever it is, they would brew that second round with their tiny little mash tun and put it right in on top of the beer that's already going. So then you get like kind of a double fermentation. So I don't know what that would do. Like
several days in, they're adding another batch of fresh wort to
That's
it.
That's interesting.
Yeah, huh. Yeah. Okay. And it's the same with the double. The double style that we drink now is a little bit different because you'd have to look into like what Jean de Klerk has talked about in terms of the Trappist beers because he was kind of like the...
He was kind of the consultant to a lot of the Trappist monastery breweries, wasn't he?
Yeah. So the double as we know it is more of like a modern iteration of the beer, but the name is derived from the process. Same with the triple, the 3 fermentations, the 2 fermentations, etc. So I'd be curious to know what would happen to my Belgian triple or your Belgian triple if we brewed in the same way. You know, if you wanted a 5-gallon batch, you'd brew 2.5 and then 2.5.
You would think that it would change the course of the fermentation a little bit and it probably would have some impact on the way the yeast expresses itself.
100%.
Yeah.
That's always kind of like a confounding thing for me when people who don't know, they're starting from sort of baseline with understanding Belgian beer, like they've never had a Belgian beer. Mm-hmm. They ask me to describe Belgian beer, and part of me wants to be like, Belgian beer is everything. It can literally be anything you want. But the reality is that you have to kind of filter it through like the American lens of Belgian beer. Because if you were to ask a Belgian person, like, what's Belgian beer? They wouldn't really necessarily have a good answer for
you. It's just beer,
yeah,
right, to
it's
them.
Just, yeah. It's just whatever's right down the road.
Yeah. At some sense, any beer brewed in Belgium is Belgian beer. But if you're going to brew a Belgian-style beer here in the U.S., for example, what is it that makes it Belgian-style?
I think the number one thing is yeast.
Yeah, it's just that expressive yeast, the phenolic yeast. Because really, if you think about it, the only other widely consumed beer style that has a phenolic yeast would be Hefeweizen.
What we got here? Triple with a twist?
A new beer, just released in February from Brewery Oma Gang. We were just talking about earlier, one of the oldest American breweries that makes a Belgian-style beer. This is called Triple with a Twist. Belgian-style triple ale with orange, lemon, and lime peel.
Oh, why are they doing that?
They're trying to sell beer, Mark.
There it is.
We're going to try one of these things, and we're going to pass the verdict on whether this is a good idea or a bad idea, I guess.
Oh,
I'm curious about it because I don't know if I've ever actually had a Oma Gang triple ever. I've never even seen one. Where did you find this?
I think I got it at Saver Growl. If you go on to the Oma Gang site now and you look at their beers, I mean, they've got all kinds of beers. They have hazy IPAs. They've got peanut butter pumpkin beers. It's a little disturbing. But you're right. They have never really made a triple before, I don't think.
Not that I've ever seen.
Yeah. And so I thought, okay, let's give this a try and let's see if you could reinvent this style in a way that Americans would embrace it. Like you were saying with the Boulevard, just changing the name a little bit might make a difference in the sales.
This does seem like it's directly in line with everything that's going on in the American craft beer industry, though. It's like you could literally make any beer and say with a twist and sell three times as much.
It doesn't even matter. And,
you
know, putting citrus peel in there isn't that much of a departure from what Belgians might do, I don't think, really.
No, of course not. I mean, typically there are breweries that do a triple with coriander in it, and it's got a little zestiness to it, and there's nothing wrong with that. I'm just curious if it's... I'm definitely curious if it's fruit with beer or beer with fruit.
With that prologue, let's crack this baby open.
Looks like beer.
Well, it pours with a nice snow-white head. It's golden in color, like a triple, not unlike the two that we just had. Not to say that my triple is anything that's going to set the style guidelines. And it is very clear. You know, the clarity is excellent.
They're definitely using a different yeast strain than you and me, I think.
I think at Omegang they have a house yeast strain. That's what it says on their website. Now, what that house yeast strain was before Omegang got it, I don't know. I think also the hops on this one, let me see there. I'm pretty sure there's Citra hops in here.
Really? Citra?
Magnum and Citra hops, then they add orange, lemon, and lime peel at the end of the boil. It's 9% ABV and 24 IBU.
Interesting.
Gotcha.
The Magnum almost certainly is a bittering hop. So really, the hop character is all going to be Citra. That's not crazy in a way.
It's refreshing.
There's not a ton of hop, you know, aroma in the nose. Not really even a ton of fruit zest.
No, it's more in a palate.
It's a little more neutral, I would say. I mean, the yeast character is not as pronounced as the beers that we've been drinking up to this point. Pretty approachable, I think.
For my palate, the lime kind of sticks out, but maybe I'm just sensitive to it or something.
No, I think so.
I do think they've balanced it pretty well, though. It's not overpowering at all. It's definitely a good beer with some fruit zest, you know.
I think it's, you know, recognizable as a triple, if one that's a little bit more approachable from the yeast being a little bit more dialed back.
Yeah, I would want some more yeast expression for sure. Maybe they like cold fermented it or something. I feel like you get a great expression out of your yeast if you just let them rip.
What's your experience with Omegang beers? Because presumably they're using the same yeast for this beer as their other ones.
One of my favorite beers they make is a Saison.
Oh, the Hennepin?
Yes.
Yeah, that's a good beer, isn't it?
Yeah. I love that one. And Three Philosophers is good, too.
Yeah, yeah.
But those are... I don't really drink a ton of Omegang because it's just not really around.
Yeah.
And I'm not... No offense to Omegang, but I'm not really like seeking out Omegang, you know? But I actually drove to my cousin's wedding a while ago, and they live in upstate New York, and we were driving right past Cooperstown, but it was Sunday, and they were closed.
Yeah.
Otherwise, I totally would have stopped in and would have wanted to try a bunch of their stuff. Cause
I always thought the grounds looked really cool there.
Yeah. Plus, it's Cooperstown. I love baseball. Yeah.
It's a baseball Hall of Fame. You know, I haven't been to either. I've never been to Cooperstown, but it's on my bucket list.
The unfortunate thing for baseball in my brain is that the fact that the brewery was closed meant that I wasn't going to either.
Yeah.
So.
Well, you got to have your priorities, right?
Absolutely.
If you're a baseball fan, who's your favorite team?
The Philadelphia Phillies. The
Phillies, okay.
Yeah, I don't know if that was ever mentioned, but I grew up in Philadelphia or in the suburbs of Philadelphia.
Okay. That. Yeah.
Yeah, I came out here for college, Denison University.
That's right, you went to Denison. Yeah.
Okay.
And if I remember correctly, the buzzsaw that's a reference to the swimming team?
Yeah, that's right.
Okay, tell us about that.
Yeah, I'm surprised you remember that. That's wild. My former business partner and I, we met on the swim team at Denison.
Okay.
So the name of the company was kind of an homage to like the beginning of how we became friends. We also both thought it was like alliterative and memorable. You know, it was very brandable. Checked a lot of boxes for a business name in that sense.
Well, tell us a little bit about your new gig at Hosters and what people might expect.
Yeah, definitely. Dan Myers has been working on reviving the Hoster brand. He bought the name from the family a while back. And for people who don't know, Hosters was kind of like the original Columbus scaled brewery, founded in 1836. Became one of the most prominent breweries of the entire Midwestern area. And they struggled post-Prohibition and kind of came back and forth and back and forth a few times until finally they were unable to keep business going in the early 2000s. So then they closed. And he had basically gotten the name at that point and had some other breweries contract brew their style of beer and release it into the public. But this is really the first time with this current opening of Hoster, this is going to be the first time that the Hoster name beers are brewed in the Hoster brewery.
And there's going to be a place people can go to the Hoster yes. brewery, which that'll be the first time also yeah. in those 25
There'll
years.
Be a tap room. It's up by the airport. We'll have, I think, at least 10 beers, 11 beers, maybe more on tap. We're still working out the details of how many we're going to do. But of those beers, four of them are going to be my recipe of Belgian beers.
Okay.
Which is kind of fun.
Can you share any more details? Or do you
yeah, totally. I can yeah, tell okay, you. Yeah. Why not? I mean, I haven't been told not to tell you. So we got some classic Belgians that are going to be on tap at the beginning. So we're going to have a wit beer. We're going to have a Belgian double. We're going to have a Belgian golden strong. And then we're going to have one that's a little bit different, but we're going to have a beer de garde.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Nice. You don't find a lot of those around.
No. Yeah. The unknown cousin of the Saison.
Technically a French beer, I suppose you'd say.
Yeah. Well, it's like, I think it's like...
I mean, the border between Belgium and France is not a real solid thing, right? Culturally.
No, right. Yeah, exactly.
It's a political thing.
Yeah. It's like if you go to Chimay or Aval, you're expected to speak French.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
You know what's interesting? This is kind of an aside, not related to Hoster. One of my best friends in the brewing industry during Buzzsaw, he was a sales rep for another brewery, Forbidden Root.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And
yeah.
one of the owners of Forbidden Root is Randy Mosher.
Right, right.
The yep. brew writer, mm-hmm. you know, taste of beer. Randy Mosher came to town to like check on the brewery and all this stuff, and he brought him the Buzzsaw.
Okay.
And so
okay,
I got to sit down with him and meet him and talk
oh,
to
that's
him.
Wonderful.
It was super cool. And he was like, oh, you make Belgian beer? He's like, do you speak French? And I was like, no. And he's like, you should. Or he's like, or at least you should learn how to read French so yeah. you can really dive into like how some of these beers in southern Belgium are really made. And I was like, oh my God, you're right. Read the original text of Jean de Klerk's textbook of brewing yeah. in French. That'd be cool. Yeah.
Well, it's easier than learning Dutch, I think.
I try to. I watch a lot of cycling, and it's just not, no, it's not going to happen.
Yeah. I watch The Chef on The Muppets.
Isn't that Swedish?
Swedish. I thought it was yeah, the Swedish guy. I prefer that Swedish, yeah. Yeah, not quite the same, but that's okay. Hold on. I am very curious about this next beer. So this beer was mentioned earlier. We're going also Brewery Omegang here. Three Philosophers, which is a quadruple ale.
This is also with a twist.
Three Philosophers is interesting in its own right because they put in, I think, 2% Leafman's Creek into the Three Philosophers. So there's a little bit of cherry.
Is it Leafman's Creek or is it their own?
I think it's Leafman's.
Interesting.
And maybe because, I mean, maybe Leafman's is owned by yeah, Duvel too. Perhaps. I don't know. I don't know the whole connection. But if you look on the website, that's what it says.
Interesting.
But here's the thing. This is going to be a nitro pour.
Oh, like, shit.
Like okay. a Guinness, right?
Doesn't make sense.
I'll try anything, but right? that's a very interesting take on it.
Because if you think about Belgian beers are highly carbonated, but the idea of a nitro pour is, you know, once the bubbles all leave, then it's pretty low carbonation.
How do you do a nitro beer in a can?
Well, I think Guinness figured that out. I'm assuming there's going to be a widget in here. It's probably not the kind of thing that a small brewery can do very easily.
What do you mean widget?
A widget is a little plastic thing that's like a nucleation site for the nitrogen bubbles.
Right. So that's exactly what I was wondering because yeah. the nitro taps have, they have the distributor plate with the tiny little holes yeah. in it, yeah. which is what knocks out all the gas and makes it really, really foamy.
It says a blend of quadruple ale and creek ale with cherries. Of course, creek ale, I mean, that implies cherries, but that's all right. It's American market. And then 9.7% ABV.
Oh, wow. Look at that. You can see the bubbles are just very slow to rise. Yeah. You can literally see it's nitro from the get-go.
You're getting a bit of the cascade there. Not quite like a Guinness, but in that vein.
Never had a quad on nitrogen
Nitro quad. That's right.
Yeah. It's really unique.
I think that's a great idea to do a beer that's got like 2% of the cherry beer because of the acidity.
Yeah.
And the sweetness of a beer like a quad. Just kind of cut through that.
Yeah.
It is a good idea. Yeah. And I don't know if anybody else who does this. I mean, of course, they've been doing this for a long time. And I think I remember reading a long time ago a story about like they had it and they just wanted a little more crispness, a little more zip.
Yeah.
Someone came up with the idea, well, let's put a creek in here. And that was a trick.
I wonder if they were kind of just like, what do we got laying around?
yeah, maybe. Right?
That's kind of what I'm hoping.
I don't know if they tried framboise, they tried a creek, they tried, you know, they tried the peach one. We got to go with the cherry.
Did you invert the can 3 times? There's very specific instructions on here, none of which did I see you follow.
I didn't do that, I have to admit.
Just swirl it up real good.
You just think you can pick up any can and open it, Pat. It says wait.
What else was I supposed to do?
So invert can 3 times.
Okay.
That's to conjure the spirits. Pour hard into center of glass. You didn't do too bad of a job on that.
I tried to do that.
Sit back, ponder, and enjoy the show. Well, I mean, who wouldn't do that?
That's a
whole point. You got that part down. Yeah.
We can do that.
We can enjoy the show. Okay. Well, there it is. Tastes good.
Again, I think it smells very clean.
That's true. Yeah.
Yeah.
Once again, presumably the same yeast.
A little yeast character. It does have a little, though.
Maybe if I sit here and let it warm up a bit, I'll get a little more. But, you know, I like the Belgian yeast to just smack me. So, I'm not normal in that regard. I don't know if I'm the normal beer drinker.
No, I would agree with you. I mean, I want to get some phenolics in there. I want to get some fruitiness. I mean, if it's too restrained, I mean, it just doesn't seem right.
I like a good flavor punch.
It's been a while since I had the stock standard 3 Philosophers.
Yeah, I haven't had it in a long time.
It's a very enjoyable beer to drink. You know, it is less carbonated, and so the malts express themselves in a little bit different way, a little softer, a little maltier than your standard Belgian quad.
All right, nitrogenated quad. We've done it.
I did just drink a quad right before coming on the show.
Okay. Right before coming on the show?
What were you drinking? Yeah, I stopped by the Ohio Tap Room with a buddy.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, they've got Gold Top from Hastron, so, you know, going over there and hanging out with drinking some of that. But Little Fish, out of Athens, had a quad.
Oh, okay. Really?
I didn't know that. It's called Balaclava.
Okay. Man, I'm going to have to go seek that out.
Yeah, it was pretty solid. You know, it was not too sweet, and it was well-aged enough to not be extra boozy. It had a nice balance. The Belgians would say it was digestible.
Okay.
It was not overly cloying or anything like that. Obviously, it was on draft, so unfortunately, it was not like nice and bubbly, like a beer in a can or a beer in a bottle or something like that. So, but it was very good. Drinking this beer, I'm like thinking about the beer that I just drank, and it's very similar in its profile because even though this does have the cherry ale in it, that beer was like very red. It wasn't brown, and it wasn't kind of copper colored.
Okay.
It had a nice red, clear color to it. I mean, I don't know if the yeast they use is similar at Little Fish for their Belgian beers, but it was a pretty clean smelling beer, you know, and it drank malty and clean and had a little bit of that like Belgian finish to it at the end of the taste. It was not very Belgian-y in the aroma at the beginning.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Okay. I think I know what you mean. Yeah.
I read somewhere that 70% of your taste is actually olfactory sense. It's in your nose.
I think that's right.
When you put something in your mouth, you end up going... Yeah. So I'm always curious about drinking beer. Like, how much do I get up front and then how much do I get at the end? Because it's technically the same sensory.
Because sometimes I'll be smelling and I'm like, okay, I'm kind of sussing this out. And then I take a drink and then I'm like, oh, okay, now I get it.
It's like way more concentrated.
Yeah, yeah.
Cool.
We're finishing on what I would call a classic. This is Brother Thelonious Belgian Style Abbey Ale from North Coast Brewing out in California. Independent since 1988. The Trappist beers are brewed by monks, and so they're like, well, we have a monk, too, in America here. Thelonious monk.
He's one of the greats, absolutely.
And apparently, there's a certain percentage of the sales of this beer that go to support an education program at the Monterey Jazz Festival every year.
Oh, that's cool.
That's amazing. Yeah, that's really cool.
Which is kind of cool. Yeah, North Coast has always been one of my favorite breweries in a lot of ways. I mean, they make the Old Rasputin. That's a classic imperial stout, and they've got a couple Belgian beers, and so I thought, yeah. Let's get something that isn't reinvented, just what they've been making.
To me, this has a very similar color to the previous beer.
Yeah.
Mahogany.
That's a good way to put it. Mahogany. Crystal clear, really, isn't it?
Yeah, very clear. Did you know that we actually have a brewer here in Columbus locally that brewed at North Coast?
Who is it?
Cam from Endeavor.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, that's right. I did know that, actually.
Yeah. Oh, Cameron.
Yeah, okay.
I love the aroma on this. It smells very caramely, malty, sweet. It's got a little sugariness to it, almost like a straight up caramel candy. And then along with that, you get a little bit of that stone fruit. Again, this beer does not strike me as like overly Belgian yeast expression-y, but I think you get it in that stone fruit expression of the dark malts that are in the beer. So it's a little bit there, but it just seems like a bit, it seems very, very well conditioned, I guess you could say.
Yeah. Once we get out of the Belgian beers that were made by one of the people on this podcast, we found that the Belgian yeast characters a little bit dial back, you know, and maybe that's intentional because, you know, that might be an acquired taste. You know what I mean?
Or maybe it just fits with the procedure of their brewing logistics that they have in place at their brewery.
Yeah, no, it could be.
This does say recommended serving temp 55 degrees.
Yeah, yep, get your thermometer out.
We're probably just a little bit cooler than that right now.
Most people don't. If anyone doesn't know that's listening, the typical American draft system is about 38.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Now, when you talk about making the dark beers, the Belgian dark beers, like the doubles and the Belgian dark strongs, a lot of times, a lot of that color comes from the sugars. You made a double, right? And also, did you make a quad or a dark strong?
Yeah, all three.
Yeah.
Yep.
And how would you get the dark color in there? Did you use dark sugars in those beers?
The only ones that I used dark candy sugars, like the classic Belgian candy sugars from beet sugar, the only ones were the quad and the dark strong. So okay. The Belgian double was brewed with, most of the color came from special B malt.
Yeah. Well, that's classic malt for a Belgian beer, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Also the double, I wanted the double because it's a lower alcohol beer. It's about 7%. I wanted it to have a very strong body.
Yeah.
Because I'm going to get that body in a high alcohol beer. You want to bring in some color to those quad and dark strong beers with the candy sugars and the candy syrups, whatever you're choosing to use, without making the body of the beer too heavy and then making the beer too cloyingly sweet. But the double is fortunately a smaller
ABV beer, right?
Yeah, so you can get away with doing pretty much almost all the beer as malt, but I think 7% of my grist was table sugar.
Okay.
So yeah. I dried it out.
Just
with
to dry it out a bit.
A little bit of table sugar, 7%. I mean, that's a little, maybe a bit more than a little bit. And then, yeah, Special B, and I also used, I think I used Crystal, I think it was Crystal 60 or 40, one of those, and then Aromatic.
Yeah, Aromatic's a nice aromatic malt, isn't it? Because it adds a kind of real maltiness to a beer, doesn't it?
Yeah, that sort of honey, sugary flavor.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, when I make the Belgian Dark Strong, I tend to use, well, I use Special B, but then for the color, I use a combination of American dark sugars. So I use a little bit of molasses. Molasses is, you have to be kind of careful with it because it has a very distinctive flavor and you can go overboard on it. But then also, then I use some, if I can get it, some buckwheat honey, which is a dark honey. You know, usually some piloncillo, which is like a unrefined Colombian cane sugar. So I'm trying to like Americanize the style with dark sugars from the Americas. That's my thought.
Yeah. Interesting. So the candy syrups are made from beet sugar.
Yeah.
But you can take table sugar and make candy syrup on your stove. Yeah. So you basically make caramel. So when I was homebrewing, I tried this a bunch of times. Boiling water can absorb an enormous amount of sugar. So
yes, that's right. It's highly soluble.
Extremely. So I think with one half cup of boiling water, you can dissolve something like 4 pounds of sugar.
Wow.
For a while, I started making my own sugar syrups. They would be liquid, and I would use the very minimum amount of water, and I would get it up to boil, and I would dump all the sugar in and stir it and stir it and stir it and stir it until you basically just stand over the stove, and it's good to use a cast iron because they retain heat really well.
Yeah.
And they'll distribute it over a larger area, so you'll end up heating the sugar quicker, and you won't end up risking burning it.
Right.
So the stove can be lower, the whole thing will be hotter. That's the best way to do it. You heat it up to about 234 degrees, I think is like the part where the sugar inverts. You've heard of inverted sugar?
Inverted sugar, yeah.
Yeah, so the molecule of glucose changes, it's, I guess, table sugar is sucrose, but it changes which direction that it sits in when they combine. You'll see it on the stove as you're washing it. It'll go from cloudy to clear.
Okay.
Like in like 10 seconds, the whole thing will change to clear.
Okay. And then at that point, you want to cut off the heat?
No. At that point, you want to keep the heat on.
Okay.
but the sugar has inverted, and at that point is when the sugar starts to caramelize.
Okay.
You don't want it to get too much hotter than that. If you just give it some time, mm-hmm. the sugar caramelization reaction will start happening, and it'll take maybe 10, 20, 30 minutes, depending on how dark you want it to get and okay. how intense your heat is.
Yes, okay.
It's very difficult to control, though. So, right. you know, ultimately what I would do to control the heat is when it got to the temperature that I wanted the color at, I would pour it into something cold, like a chilled
like quench
bowl,
it, basically. Yeah.
Like a chilled bowl yeah. or something just to stop it from continuing to okay. cook, you know, because it's easy to burn. But sure. yeah, you can make your own like dark candy sugar or medium candy sugar or just invert sugar. You can make clear invert
That's
syrup,
the thing in British you know. Brewing, actually. Invert sugar is a classic ingredient in British brewing.
Yeah.
Well,
that settles it. Five more beers.
I don't have any more beers, so this might be a good time to bring the festivities, at least the recorded festivities, to an end. But
yeah.
thank you so much, Gwen, for coming on.
Thanks for having me.
Good luck at Hosters, and I'm looking forward to some of those Belgian beers out there, and also some of those pilsners and other things, man. Yeah, that's going to be exciting.
All the beer there will be delicious. Victor will make sure of that, as will I. We're both very proud of what we've made so far, so we're both really excited to keep doing interesting stuff. Also honoring the tradition of the old Hoster name.
Yeah. Cool.
Cheers.
Cheers.